Welcome to today's presentation on the expert secrets to reversing diabetes. I am so glad that you're here with us with our special guest today, Dr. Dean Ornish. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Ornish. So glad to have you.
Happy to be back.
You know, many of you are well acquainted with Dr. Ornish and his work. He is a pioneer in the area of lifestyle medicine. And as founder and president of the nonprofit Preventive Medicine Research Institute and clinical professor of medicine at UC San Francisco and UC San Diego, he received his MD from the Baylor College of Medicine and was a clinical fellow in medicine at Harvard Medical School. He completed his internship and residency at Massachusetts General Hospital. You know, he's been involved for over 43 years in directing clinical research that demonstrated for the first time, this was real groundbreaking stuff, that comprehensive lifestyle changes can begin to reverse even severe coronary heart disease without drugs or surgery. So his research showed that comprehensive lifestyle changes that affect gene expression, all these things that are so important for those of us that maybe have inherited a genetic tendency to diabetes, he has shown how lifestyle can have a great impact on these things. Of course, he's the author of many different bestsellers and has been published in many peer-reviewed journals featured in most of the major media outlets. So we're just so happy that he's here today to share with us what he sees as something you can take away today to show that it is important and very effective to do certain kinds of lifestyle interventions for the reversal of diabetes and other chronic diseases. So welcome. So glad to have you with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So share with us, what have you seen as the biggest advances in terms of science and research that show us that connection between lifestyle and medicine?
Well, for the last 44 years, I've directed a series of randomized trials and clinical studies showing for the first time what a powerful difference simple changes in diet and lifestyle can make in reversing the most common chronic and often costly chronic diseases. The lifestyle intervention was the same for all of these different studies. It was a whole foods, plant-based diet, you know, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, soy products, as they come in nature, low in fat, low in sugar and refined carbs. Moderate exercise, things like walking for half an hour a day and some stretching and resistance training, meditation and other stress management techniques, and love and support to reduce it down to its essence, to eat well, move more, stress less, and love more. And the more diseases we study, the more scientific evidence we have to show what a powerful difference these simple changes can make and how quickly people can feel better and often reduce or get off of medications under their doctor's supervision that they were told that they'd have to take forever. Mm-hmm. As you know, when most people get put on medications to control, say, type 2 diabetes, and they say, how long do I have to take these? The doctor usually says forever. Yeah. It's kind of like if you imagine a doctor busily mopping up the floor around a sink that's overflowing, and someone says, how long do I have to mop up the floor? They say, well, forever. It's like, well, why don't we turn off the faucet? Why don't we treat the cause? And the cause, to a much larger degree than I had once realized, are these simple lifestyle changes. And, you know, I'm continually impressed by how our bodies often have a remarkable capacity to begin healing and much more quickly than we had once realized when we can treat the cause. And so over the last 40 years, we found these same lifestyle changes could reverse. We were the first to show that they could reverse even severe heart disease without drugs or surgery, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, early stage prostate cancer in a randomized trial we did in collaboration with the heads of neurology at Sloan Kettering in New York and at UCSF in San Francisco. We did a study with Craig Venter, who was the first to decode the human genome and found that when you change your diet and lifestyle, it actually changes the expression of your genes. And in fact, turning on the good genes, turning off the bad genes. We did a study with Dr. Elizabeth Blackburn, the Nobel laureate, who discovered telomeres, which are the ends of our chromosomes that regulate cellular aging. And as they replicate over time, as our telomeres get shorter, our lives get shorter, and the risk of premature death from pretty much everything goes up proportionally to that, we found for the first time that we could actually lengthen telomeres. And when we published this in The Lancet, they called it reversing aging at a cellular level. Yep. So my new book, which I co-authored with my wife and collaborator of over 20 years, Anne Ornish, just came out called Undo It, and in paperback. It was a national bestseller in hardcover, which I was grateful for. And we put forth this new unifying theory in there. Yeah, the book starts with one of my favorite quotes, which is from Albert Einstein, that says, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. So we try to reduce it down to its essence, you know, eat well, move more, stress less, love more. And it helps to explain why you often find that people have what are called comorbidities. They'll have type 2 diabetes, but they'll often be overweight or have high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, and so on. Because, you know, although I was trained, like most doctors, to view all of these different conditions as being different diseases, different diagnoses, and different treatments, we found over the decades that these same lifestyle changes could stop or reverse or prevent all of them. And I was wondering, well, why is that? And I realized that in this unifying theory, that they really all share the same underlying biological mechanisms, things like chronic inflammation, oxidative stress, changes in the microbiome and telomeres and gene expression, overstimulation of the sympathetic nervous system, changes in immune function, and so on. And each one of these mechanisms in turn is directly influenced by what we eat, how we respond to stress, how much exercise we get, and how much love and support we have. So it radically simplifies it's not like you have to have one diet for type 2 diabetes, a different one for heart disease, a different one for prostate cancer or whatever. It's really the same for all of them, because in many respects, they have more in common than they have different. And in a way, they're the same disease, just manifesting in different forms.
Mm-hmm. That is so interesting. And, you know, I would love to know, how did you kind of get started with work in this field? What made you interested in this?
Well, I went to medical school at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston and did my core surgery rotation with Michael DeBakey, the heart surgeon, who essentially invented bypass surgery. And we'd cut people open, we'd bypass their clogged arteries, he'd tell them they were cured, and more often than not, they'd go home and do all the things that had caused the problem in the first place. You know, eat junk food, smoke cigarettes, not manage stress, not exercise. And all too often, their new bypasses would clog up, and then we'd cut them open again, sometimes two or three times.
Wow!
In fact, he was a bit of a tyrant, you know, that, you know, he was very old school. It was like, what year are you, son? I'd say, I'm starting my third year. He goes, it's going to be so much harder to bust you out of here now that you've made it this far. In fact, he called me actually just about 4 years ago at the age of 99.
Wow!
And he said, hey, Dean, this is Mike DeBakey. I hadn't heard from him in literally decades, but I recognized he had a very distinctive Louisiana accent. And I said, hello, to what do I owe this honor? He said, well, you know, those ideas you used to have that I gave you, used to give you such a hard time about. And I said, oh yeah, I remember them really well. He goes, that's what's kept me alive all these years. I just wanted to let you know, I'm 99 years old. I'm about to die. And I just wanted you to know that I started doing all these things. My wife got interested, and that's why I'm here. I just thought you'd like to know that. So, you know, if you live long enough, you never know. But anyway,
that's a great story. I love that.
I got really, you know, interested in like, I went to these places that used to have called libraries with these things called journals, and started reading voraciously that in dogs and cats and pigs and rabbits and monkeys, they could cause them to get heart disease if they put them on an unhealthy diet and put them under stress and didn't let them exercise and so on. And you could reverse it if you change those. I said, so why should people be any different? But everybody said, no, it's impossible. The best you can do is slow down the rate at which you get worse, and that's all you can do. So one of the nice things about being still a medical student is you're not fully indoctrinated. So I took off a year and did the first of what turned out to be a series of studies showing that, in fact, you could actually reverse heart disease. And many of the people often had type 2 diabetes, and their diabetes got better as well. And we published that in, you know, the leading peer-reviewed medical journals over time. And over time, you know, about 11 years ago, Medicare created a new benefit category to cover my reversing heart disease program. And we've been training with a company called ShareCare, hospitals and clinics and physician groups around the country. And it's been working. We're getting bigger changes in lifestyle, better clinical outcomes, bigger cost savings, better adherence than anyone's ever shown. But just a few months ago, they agreed to cover my reversing heart disease program when it's done virtually. So now, if you're listening or watching this, you can live anywhere in the country and get it, and we can beam it into your home via Zoom, and Medicare will pay for it, and many of the other insurance companies will do that as well. That was really a game changer, because you don't have to, you know, we can reduce health disparities and health inequities and reach people wherever they live. If anyone's interested in learning more about the Medicare-covered reversing heart disease program, just go to myNameOrnish.com. And then also U.S. News and World Report recently announced they have a panel of experts that rates different diets every year. They also rate medical schools and universities and so on. And for the 11th year since 2011, they rated what they call the Ornish diet as number one for heart health. So I'm really appreciative awesome. About that.
That's great. That's great. So I'm really interested in some of the research that you did on how lifestyle impacts our genes. You know, genes are something we're born with, and a lot of people feel like you can't do anything about what you're born with. So how does lifestyle impact this?
Well, a lot of people feel that way. And I've been working with former President Bill Clinton since 1993. He's talked about this publicly. But 14 years ago, when his bypass was clogged up, one of his cardiologists held a press conference on CNN and said, oh, his diet and lifestyle had nothing to do with it. It was all in his genes. And having worked with him for so many years, I knew it had everything to do with it. So I contacted him, and he went on this program, and he's been now doing it for 14 years. He's talked about it publicly, and he's getting better. And I think whatever your politics, when a former president makes these kinds of changes, especially one who was known for, you know, making, you know, many trips to McDonald's and so on, I think that sets a great example for everyone. And again, what's good for your heart is also good for your brain, as well as all these other conditions. We're now in the midst of doing the first randomized trial in collaboration with the heads of neurology at Harvard and at Mass General and the Brigham and Women's Hospital and Renown in Reno and University of California, San Diego, as well as in the Bay Area. Wow. To see whether these same lifestyle changes may stop or reverse the progression of men and women who have early Alzheimer's disease. You know, what's good for your heart is good for your brain. And the same mechanisms that affect heart disease and these other conditions like diabetes and so on also affect Alzheimer's. And I think we're at a place with Alzheimer's very reminiscent of where we were with heart disease 44 years ago. In other words, the same biological mechanisms are in play. Less intensive lifestyle interventions back then could slow the rate at which your arteries got clogged, but they would still get worse. They just got worse more slowly. We found more intensive interventions, as we've discussed, could actually reverse it. There was improved blood flow after a month. The heart began to pump blood better after a month. After a year, even severely clogged arteries became measurably less clogged, and even more reversal after 5 years and after 1 year, whereas the randomized control groups got worse and worse over time. By analogy, less intensive lifestyle interventions have been shown to slow the rate of progression into dementia and Alzheimer's. My theory is that more intensive ones might stop or reverse it, you know, ounce of prevention, pound of cure, if you will. And so we're in the midst of doing this study, and it's too early to comment on it, but I'm cautiously optimistic that it might work. If anyone's interested in joining it, we're just enrolling our last group of patients. Again, go to ornish.com. It's all free to the people in the study. We provide 21 meals a week for 40 weeks for you and your caregiver during the course of the study. And I'm really excited about this study. My mom had Alzheimer's. I saw how tragic it was watching her brilliant mind decay. I have one of the genes for it. And unlike other diseases, nothing really works to even stop the progression of Alzheimer's. You can slow it down a little bit for a while, but that's about it. So if we can stop or reverse it, I think that potentially could give millions of people new hope and new choices.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting that researchers are starting to refer to Alzheimer's sometimes as a diabetes type 3 because of its tie that it seems to have with insulin resistance and some of those same mechanisms that drive the metabolic mess of diabetes. How is it that in your study, you're addressing these things? You mentioned you provide meals. So what is the program that people are implementing?
I think disordered blood sugar and insulin regulation and so on is part of Alzheimer's, but it's only one of many mechanisms. People like to reduce things down to just one thing, but it's many things. It's all the things we talked about. It's changes in blood sugar, changes in inflammation and oxidative stress, and changes in immune function, in the microbiome, the 100 trillion cells in our guts, and so on. But each one of these mechanisms is directly influenced by what we eat, how we respond to stress, how much exercise we get, and how much love and support we enjoy. Medicare is covering the program. They're providing it for 72 hours, which we divide into twice a week for 4 hours at a time for 9 weeks. And we've been doing this with ShareCare.
Okay.
And now we can do it virtually anywhere in the country, which is great. But 96% of the people who start the program finish all 72 hours of it. They get an hour of exercise, an hour of meditation and yoga. Who would have thought Medicare would be paying for that? An hour of a support group and an hour of a group meal with a lecture. Now, and we're using the same intervention for the Alzheimer's study as well.
Okay.
So the idea that small changes are easy and big changes are hard turns out really not to be the case. It turns out that only, you know, less than half of people prescribe statins to lower their cholesterol are taking them just, you know, 4 to 6 months later, even though they're of proven benefit with people with heart disease. And usually, you know, the insurance company or someone else pays for it. And that's just taking a pill once a day. But we're asking people to make much bigger changes. Yeah. And people say, well, that's crazy. If we can't get people to take their pill, how are they going to make big changes like that? But the reason is that the pill doesn't make you feel better, but the lifestyle changes do. And again, because the biological mechanisms are so dynamic, you can get better quickly, you can get worse quickly. When people make these changes, they generally feel so much better so quickly, or their blood sugar improves so quickly that they say things like, you know, I like eating junk food, but not that much because my quality of life is so much better.
Yeah.
And it's especially dramatic in people who have heart disease because the angina or the chest pain tends to go away. Mm-hmm. And for someone who can't, you know, walk across the street without getting chest pain or make love with their spouse or play with their kids or go back to work without getting chest pain, within a few weeks, they can do all those things. Then they say it kind of changes the equation from preventing something bad from happening years down the road, like reducing the likelihood of a heart attack or stroke, the fear of dying, if you will. What really motivates people is joy of living, that, you know, wow, I feel so much better. I can do all these things I couldn't do before. What I gain is so much more than what I give up. And quickly, that even if I knew I wouldn't live a day longer, I would still do this because the quality of my life is so much better. You know, there's a wonderful film that came out about a couple of years ago that James Cameron, the, you know, legendary filmmaker, did Avatar and Terminator and so on, and Luis Hoyos did, where they... to show again how dynamic these changes are, they took elite athletes and they put them on a plant-based diet, a healthy plant-based diet, like what I recommend. And they found that their athletic performance increased dramatically. They were able to become the mixed martial artists national champion. The Tennessee Titans won their first Super Bowl championship when most of their players went on a plant-based diet. Dotsie Bausch got an Olympic medal in cycling, one of the most challenging sports at almost 40 years old and so on. But there's this one scene in there where they gave a single meat-based meal to three guys in their mid-20s. And, you know, guys get erections at night when they sleep. It's just a normal function. And so they measured how many erections they got and how hard they were the night after they had a single meat-based meal. They repeated it the following night with a single plant-based meal. I think it was a Beyond Meat meal. And they found that all three guys had 300 to 500% more frequent erections and 10 to 15% harder erections after one plant-based meal compared to a meat-based meal. Apparently the film crew went on a plant-based diet after they shot that scene. And it's a big problem for you. You know, 40% of guys in their 40s have issues with erectile dysfunction, 50% of guys in their 50s and so on.
So true.
But it's not just your heart. Your heart gets more blood. Your sexual organs get more blood flow. Your brain gets more blood flow. And it just shows again how powerful and dynamic these mechanisms are. And, you know, a lot of people are worried about COVID-19, especially with the new Omicron variant and how infectious it is, that even if you're triple vaccinated, it doesn't prevent it in, you know, 20% of the cases. There's a lot of breakthrough infections. You know, obviously everyone should wear masks and so on. But even so, 20% of people get infected, even if they have, you know, their booster shots and so on. So they're asking, what can I do to enhance my immune function? And it turns out that a couple of studies really, I thought, were pretty amazing. One showed that they looked at 3,000 frontline healthcare workers. These are people who take care of COVID patients every day, so they're exposed to it all the time. Mm-hmm. And those that followed a diet like I recommend, a healthy plant-based diet, were 73% less likely to develop moderate to severe illness. Those on an Atkins paleo diet were 400% more likely to get it. You know, the same. And then there was another study that Walter Willett did at Harvard with almost 600,000 people. And again, they found those on a healthy plant-based diet were 41% less likely to get moderate to severe disease compared to those on a typical American diet. So again, when you just, and then finally, if you add to that the fact that more global warming is caused by livestock consumption than all forms of transportation combined, you know, my son is an accomplished musician, and we went to one of his favorite indie bands is called Wolfpack. And a couple of years ago, we went to one of their concerts at the Greek Theater at the University of California, Berkeley. There were probably 15 or 20,000 people there, mostly in their 20s. The frontman of the band is a vegan, and he heard I was there. So went backstage and said hi to him. He said, you know, during my concerts, I usually spend 15 minutes or so talking about why a plant-based diet is why I'm on it and why it's good. But, you know, and I talk about your work, but since you're here, why don't you go out and talk about your work? And I said, what? You want me to go out in the middle of your concert and talk about eating a plant-based diet? He goes, yeah. So I did. And for 15 minutes, I was cool to my son. It didn't last very long, but for 15 minutes, I was cool. And I didn't talk to a group of 20-year-olds about heart disease and diabetes and things like that. Most people don't really care about that. They think they're immortal. But right. I talked about, you know, how it can feel overwhelming. Like, what can I do as one person mm-hmm. to make a difference in the world? You know, when there's so many horrible issues, global warming and, you know, feeding the hungry and deforestation of the Amazon and all these, you know, sentient beings mm-hmm. that are suffering and getting killed. And I said, well, you know, something as primal as what you put in your mouth every day can make a difference in all of these different arenas. You know, that, again, more global warming is caused by livestock consumption than all forms of transportation combined. It takes 14 times more resources to make a pound of meat-based yep. protein than plant-based protein. You know, yeah. If enough people ate a plant-based diet, no one need go hungry. I was on the board of directors of the mm-hmm. San Francisco Food Bank a few years ago, and I learned that 1 out of 5 kids in the Bay Area, which is so affluent, goes to bed hungry every night. That's just pitiful. Mm-hmm. We can do better than yeah. that. You know, there's 13 billion animals get killed every year after living horrible lives, you know, in these little pens mm-hmm. That aren't necessary because we can eat healthy without that. And it doesn't mean you have to go on a vegan diet, but just having a meatless Monday or taking one meal and foregoing meat can make a difference. And I just find that if it's meaningful, then it's sustainable and people are much more likely to do that. So in my Undo book, we really talk about, you know, the kind of the radical simplicity of this, but also that, you know, what's good for you is good for the planet. What's personally sustainable is globally sustainable.
And, you know, that brings out the fact that there are so many different angles, so many reasons to choose a plant-based diet. Not only does it help us reverse disease, which might be what brought people to this summit, but it has an impact on our minds, on our relationships, on the ecology, on the entire world. And each one of us can contribute to that by our own choices. I really appreciate the way that you have shared this. What would you say to someone who's thinking about making a change? Maybe they want to go more plant-based. Where should they start? What do you recommend? What do you see as maybe some of the key factors for reaping some of these wonderful benefits we've been talking about?
Well, it depends on what your goals are. If you're trying to reverse disease, that's really the pound of cure, if you will. That's more prescriptive. We found that it's hard to reverse a chronic disease. That's why we were the first to show that in so many cases, is because most people didn't go far enough. So uh-huh. The Undo book is about undoing or reversing disease. You know, my favorite key on the keyboard has always been the undo button. And now we have one in our lives in a sense, yes. But it's a lot to do that. So, you know, but again, if you make big changes all at once, you're going to feel so much better so quickly that yes. makes it sustainable. The other is the more small gradual change approach. But if you only make small gradual changes, you know, you may not really make changes big enough to feel that much better, but you're still not be able to eat or do everything you want. So what matters most if you're otherwise healthy, let's say you know, you have a little bit high blood sugar, but not frank type 2 diabetes or type 1 diabetes, or you want to get your blood pressure down a few points or your cholesterol down or just lose a few pounds or whatever. What matters most is your overall way of eating and living. So if you indulge yourself one day, it doesn't mean you cheated or you failed or you're bad. Just eat healthier the next. If you don't have time to exercise one day, do a little more the next. If you don't have time to meditate for an hour, do it for a minute. Whatever you do, there's a corresponding benefit. In all of our studies, I had predicted incorrectly, as it turned out, that younger people with less severe disease would do better. But it really turned out not to be how old or how sick they were. It was simply a function of the more they changed, the more they improved at any age, which is a very empowering realization. But so much of the language of behavioral change has this kind of, you know, finger wagging, nurse ratchet, you know, moralizing, you know, shaming quality to it. You know, like, I cheated on my diet, you know, or once you call foods good or bad, it's a small step to saying I'm a bad person because I eat bad food. And then at that point, might as well just finish the burger because you're a bad person and so on. So rather than calling foods good or bad, to just say some foods are more healthful than others, and to say, start where you are and say, how much are you willing to change? Well, I'll eat a little less of the unhealthy things and more of the healthy things. Great. How much exercise are you willing to do? Well, I'll walk 15 minutes a day. How much meditation and yoga will you do? I don't know, I'll meditate 5 minutes a day. I'll get up 5 minutes earlier and do that. How much love and support? I'll spend more time with my friends and family. and then track it and see how you feel. And then after a month or so, if you wanted to lose 10 pounds and you lost five, or if you wanted your A1C to come down a point and it came down a half point, or you wanted your cholesterol level to come down 50 points and it came down 30, whatever, then you know you're on the right track. And now just eat a little more of the healthy and a little less of the unhealthy, do a little more of the exercise, the meditation, more time with your friends and family. I like that approach because you can't fail. You know, once you go on a diet, then you're more likely to go off of it. And, you know, even more than being healthy, most people want to feel free and in control. And as soon as I tell somebody, you know, eat this and don't eat that, they immediately want to do the opposite. You know, this yeah. goes back to when God said, don't eat the apple, and that didn't go so well. And that was, you know, God talking. So this way you are choosing how much you want to change, not because someone told you to do. And then you experience the benefits from your own action. So then you know, like, oh, when I eat this way, I feel good. When I eat that way, I don't feel so good. So let me eat more of this and less of that. Because it comes out of your own experience, then it's not this diet war and, well, maybe it's true and maybe it's not, or who should I believe? Then you just know.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's so important that we're talking about a lifestyle and not just a diet, something temporary. It's more something you want to be able to adopt in a way that enables you to do it sustainably, to stay on that, to build habits, and to be able to do it for a lifetime. You know, our time is running out, but I am so, so pleased with all of these keys and secrets that you have shared with us today, Dr. Ornish. This has been really wonderful, good information that we can go out and start applying to our lives. And as you said, each one of us has that choice. We can decide if we want to experience the change and the benefits slowly or quickly. And that's all completely within our own control. And that's just wonderful because I think it gives us all hope. It doesn't matter where we are. We can start from where we are and continue on this journey to better health. So I just want to say thank you so much for sharing with us today. And if you have a final word of wisdom that you would like to share with our audience, this would be a great time.
Well, thanks to you, because awareness is the first step in healing. And thank you for helping to raise awareness with so many people. And if anyone's interested in learning more about our work, go to ornish.com. Everything on there is free. It talks about the Alzheimer's study we're doing, the Medicare-covered reversing heart disease program, which is now available by Zoom, and the paperback of ornish.com, which just came out. You know, I've been doing this work for over four decades, and I'm more passionate about it than ever because I think, you know, there's a convergence of forces that finally make this the right idea at the right time. And having seen what a powerful difference these simple changes can make, I really appreciate the chance to share them with you and your listeners.
Thank you so much. And to all of you listening today, remember that health is wealth. And with every healthy choice, you are getting richer. Thank you for joining us.
You too. Take care. Happy New Year.
Thank you.